This is Dan Blank. Welcome to the We Grow Media podcast, helping you to make an impact and build your legacy. Today, the topic is talking about how each of us tend to choose to be overwhelmed. So I'm going to talk about why this is, the effect it has on your life, and most importantly, what you can do about it. So most people I know tend to choose having more, not having less. They tend to focus on looking at the potential of what they could have or what they could be, not on just accepting what already is. They get excited about the new things that are coming up, not finding ways to appreciate the older things they already have or already aware of. So in general, I find that I live in a culture where we're racing, we're striving, we're doubling down on our bets so that we hope to have this great payoff at the end. There is this constant pressure to do more, to be more, to have more, to represent more. And the singular theme that I find repeated again and again with the people that I know and I come in contact with is that they are overwhelmed. Now, I own a business, and because of that, I tend to meet a lot of people. I teach a lot of courses. I work with a lot of writers. I meet a lot of people in person at conferences and events and meetings. Again and again, I hear how overwhelmed people are with all the things that are on their plate already, their obligations. They're overwhelmed with all the things that they want to do. They're overwhelmed just keeping up with the things that they have already. And they're also overwhelmed with the idea of all the things that they want to become. That inherent in some of this sense of being overwhelmed is that they're not satisfied. Now, we often talk about this idea of simplicity. We say we want the simple things in life. We go on a beautiful vacation. We see what it's like to just sit on that rocking chair or sit on the beach or by the pool. We say we want the simple life. And the fact is, we are lying to ourselves. We make conscious choices again and again and again to reject the simple life and to opt for the more complicated life. So oftentimes I look at our heroes. Who is the person that resonates with you, that somehow embodies the symbolism of the simple life that you want? So the other day, I saw my favorite singer at a pretty intimate gathering of 200 people. His name is Glenn Hansard. He starred in and wrote the music for the movie Once, which won an Academy Award. He's from the bands The Swell Season and The Frames. He's a brilliant Irish singer-songwriter. Wonderful presence, wonderful music. And when you go and see someone like that, or when I see him, you're kind of reminded of these things, of this simple life that you want, because you listen to the music, and the singer kind of represents the things that he sings about. They're about relationships and conversation and art and literature and travel and all the experiences that make up a meaningful life. And the idea of meaningfulness is, I think, what's often lost and something we need to talk a lot more about. Now, the chances are that in your life, there's a singer, or an athlete, or a social leader, or a scientist, or someone who inspires you. And chances are, they represent more to you than you might realize. That if it is a scientist, that there's something about their discipline, about their laser-like focus, about their effect on the world, that embodies why you respect them. So, as you think about this stuff, I think it always has to be sort of, put in context of your life. That for many of us, many people I know, that they spend their days sitting in a gray office cube all day. They go to the same office, they spend 45 minutes or an hour and a half in a car on a train. They go to some gray cube and slave away at work. Their Saturdays are spent doing things like cleaning out the garage. They constantly complain about being overwhelmed by email or something like social media. And I think about, how a lot of us, when we were younger, maybe it was when you were 9 or 14 or 19 or 24, life was a bit simpler because you had these very strict limitations. You had no money. You had to be places. Everything was set. A path was sort of set for you. And because of that, you could really focus on the idea of exploration or conversation or relationships. But now, oftentimes, things seem to come back to one thing again and again: money. And we keep striving for this money, and because of that, we keep making decision after decision that overwhelms us. And I find that a lot of people can't remember the last time that they read a book. And you see them change over time, that more and more they become defined not by who they are, they become defined by the title on their business card. And I hear this a lot, that people would like to spend more time with their family, if only. They'd like to spend more time with their faith, if only. They would like to get back in shape, if only. They want to be this person they've always dreamed of, if only. And the second part of that sentence is, if only they weren't so overwhelmed. So the interesting thing about being overwhelmed is that oftentimes we like to be overwhelmed. We choose to be overwhelmed. And I worked in a corporate environment for many, many years. And sometimes I would see that when you're overwhelmed, it's a signal to others that you are important. That because you're so overwhelmed, it means that you're busy. And because you're busy, it means that you are essential. And it means that others should, you know, one, not ask more of you, but that you are the essential cog in the machine, that everything would stop if you didn't have all this stuff that you're trying to juggle. So it becomes a sense of our self-worth, that if we ever came to someone and said, everything's great and perfect balance, I went for a jog this morning and I then spent time with my kids, then I did some really important work, and then I took a break and I checked my email, I got back to everyone, then I had a nice healthy lunch. If you told someone that in a very calm tone, one, they might not believe you, first of all, but there could be this sense, depending on where you work and how it is, that this is untenable, that this is not the reality, that you're clearly not doing enough. Then maybe you're not as essential as you think, or you're not doing as much as you could at work, that because you're balancing everything, you're forcing your colleagues to shoulder more workload. Because that's another theme I see a lot, is people who work in companies where their department has been cut and staff has been cut, they now work, quote unquote, the job of two or three or four people. A lot of this is about the idea of how we filter out what we feel is important. That we don't say no, not just to other people. There's a big talk out there about we have to say no to others. And oftentimes I think that that's not really the issue. I don't think a lot of us have people constantly running up to us saying, oh my goodness, could you just do this one thing for me? And then I kind of sheepishly say, oh sure. That happens to a degree. But I don't think it's the 90% of time that people make it out to. I think the most important person that we don't say no to is ourselves. We make conscious decision after conscious decision, these expectations that we couldn't possibly live up to. So we set these expectations in our head. We promise that we'll do these things to ourselves and thereby to other people. Then we feel overwhelmed and you couldn't possibly get to them. And of course, the end result is that you feel overwhelmed. So if we think about the idea of what can you do about this, what can you do to not be overwhelmed? So I want to take you through a few ideas here. One is that you have to own the fact that you are overwhelmed and that this is unsustainable. Like most issues, the first step is really admitting that there is a problem. Because if you're just going to justify that you have to be this busy because your colleagues are this busy and you're that type of person where if everyone is acting a certain way, you have to kind of buy into that culture, you've got to own up to whether you're going to be this overwhelmed no matter what. Or maybe it's the balance. Maybe it's the idea of how you balance work and personal and health and hobbies and family and all that sort of stuff. Or maybe it's that you have false expectations of how many things you can do. The second thing, I think, is to let go of the guilt. Everyone I know feels overwhelmed, and I think that to a certain degree, many of them have a sense of guilt about it. Because when you say you're overwhelmed, you're admitting that I should be able to do this properly, and I'm failing. And when you admit that there's a problem, You let go of the guilt. What it allows you to do is to realize this is a lot of stuff to do. Let me look at it more objectively. Let's really kind of level this out and see how I can start, you know, really creating something that's meaningful to myself and those I have obligations to. The idea is not just for you to not be overwhelmed. The idea is for you to live up to your obligations to yourself, to your family if you have, to your friends, to your employer if you have, if you're owning your own business, to the people you serve, whoever it might be. Another part of this is to not blame other people. You are the linchpin in this whole thing. This is not your boss's fault or your spouse's fault or your kid's fault. Yes, it is insanely hard to juggle any one of those things by themselves, a relationship or kids or a job. But it's not their fault if you feel overwhelmed, because they are asking for what they know to ask for, and it's up to you to understand how you can set limits, how you can set expectations, how you can serve their needs and your own needs and balance this in some way, shape, or form. Now, I've noticed this trend, I'll say, in the last, 20 years, maybe it's 30, maybe it's 10, this word of becoming a prosumer. This idea that we want to be an expert in everything that we do, that it's no longer okay to just drink a mediocre cup of coffee. We have to have one of these fancy machines in our home and a choice of all the best coffees that are brewed in just the perfect way. We can't just buy a blender. We have to buy a really top-of-the-line, professional-level Cuisinart. We can't just buy a lawnmower. We need to make sure that it's a John Deere riding mower, even if you have a very tiny lawn. We got to do something, you know, install shelves in your closet, something you might do once every 5 years. You got to go buy that Makita drill because it's the professional one. It's the one that reflects your sense of taste, your sense of work ethic. The problem with that is that you see this in people's garages. They open up their garage. There's this beautiful Craftsman display of all their tools, Craftsman brand tools with a big red case or Snap-on or whatever it is. There's this pressure to not just be mediocre. You have to know a lot about wine, a lot about cars, a lot about gas mileage, a lot about how to best prune those bushes and mow the lawn and what shirt looks best and all the sports stuff and how to barbecue better than everyone else. What it means is that you start piling on the expectations to be an expert at everything. When it's obvious, it's so obvious that we all miss it. You can't. You can't be an expert at everything. You can't be great at everything. Another aspect of this is that you have to stop living the lives of other people. That person next door gets a beautiful new MacBook computer, or a beautiful new car, or redoes their lawn with sod and these great plantings. You have to know when your desire to do that doesn't set you on a fruitful path for yourself. So I work with a lot of writers, and I think it's the same thing there. There's so much pressure to do everything. The thing about the web is there's a million tips as to what you could be doing. Everyone's telling their story about how they became successful or what they did that found something that worked. And what I tend to find, and I think a lot of people find, is that you could interview Eric Clapton for 3 days straight, find out every step of what he did to learn to play guitar, and you could do that every day for years, and you will never be Eric Clapton. So the real key here is the idea of building habits and building systems, that you have to find ways to do things every day or every week that work for you. Now, this could be by looking at others and seeing what works for them, or by reading books. But you have to also understand and cater this to your own sense of personality and style and purpose and goals. It's so easy to see someone play baseball or cook a great meal or polish their car to perfection and want that, want to be that person, want to own that skill. You've got to start editing what it is you desire, really focusing that, because that's where those boundaries come from that allow you to thrive on the few things you're able to really focus on. I'd also say, be careful about the idea of setting a reset button on your life. That you can do so much by taking small, conscious steps to focus on what you want and then take the pressure off little by little. Again, this is all about the idea of habits. So the idea that if you want to take the pressure off of something like email, which I know everyone I know is overwhelmed by, instead of just implementing some new system tomorrow, take 4 weeks to change how you use email. And one way that I know I've heard is it works really well for some people, maybe not for you, is the idea that the first thing you do every day of your workday is not email. So a lot of people I know, they check email first thing, like they wake up or while they're eating breakfast, they're on email. But let's just say you don't do that. Let's just say you wait till you get to the office and you boot up your email. Because it seems natural to do that. You want to see if you have to react to anything. You want to consume a little bit. The problem with that is it frames everything as reactionary. So you don't get to all those projects you have to do with their day-to-day work because you're too busy distracting yourself in a dozen or two dozen different directions. So what if the first hour of your day at work from 9 to 10 was not on email? It was digging into the most important project for that day. You spent an hour on it, then at 10 a.m., a mere hour later, you booted up email and went into it. Now, what that means is that you're getting to the biggest pressure of your day, which is that project. It means you're actually making, you're making this habit of making progress. Because so many people I know get to the end of a day and they just reacted to email and they didn't really get anything done. I mean, I find that again and again with people. It's so common. And the other thing is that we're not saying don't check email until 5 p.m. or until noon. It's 1 hour. The chances of something having gone so wrong that a mere hour difference is going to markedly change your life or your job because of it is probably very unlikely. So let's just say that you do hear something like this. You say, I want to do that. I want to check email an hour later every day. Instead of just doing that right away, give yourself 4 weeks to work up to that. Find ways of experimenting with it because you're going to have days where it just doesn't work. Work will not allow that to happen. Your attitude, you're kind of building a new habit here. The thing about a new habit is it takes time to become a habit. So you can't go 3 days in, fall off that wagon and start feeling bad about it. You've got to get back on that horse. I mean, that's sort of the typical thing. And find out, what is it? What are the triggers that allow you to stick with that habit? So this is a topic I think I'll be addressing a lot in the future because pretty much almost everyone I know is overwhelmed in some way, shape, or form. And what I see is that they tend to fight to remain that way. They don't realize it, but they do. And that when you focus on the idea of change, and you focus on meaningful goals, long-term goals, and on creating good habits to get yourself there, you'll find that you're cutting away at that sense of being overwhelmed. It may not ever go away completely, but what if you were half as overwhelmed to the degree where you said, you know what, I'm not overwhelmed anymore, I'm just busy. Or I'm not just busy anymore, I just know I'm needed in different places and I'm always trying to give a lot. Because the thing with being overwhelmed is it's a very emotional reaction. It's this panic. You wake up panicked. You wake up feeling behind. And that cuts into you so many different ways. It makes you feel again and again like you're not living up to someone's expectations, that you're behind the eight ball, that just one more thing will set you over the edge. And that's just not a pleasant thing to have. So what I'd like to know is, how are you overwhelmed? And how does this affect your life? I would love your feedback on this. If you could email me at dan@danblank.com. That's dan@danblank.com. So it's DanBlank. dan@danblank.com. So tell me how you're overwhelmed and how it affects your life. This is the first episode of the We Grow Media podcast. So if you are listening to it and you like what you hear, please subscribe to it in iTunes. Obviously, it's free. If you like at all what I'm talking about as well, please consider signing up for my weekly newsletter, which is at wegrowmedia.com/newsletter. That's wegrowmedia.com/newsletter. I focus every week on the idea of helping you make an impact and build your legacy. My name is Dan Blank. Thank you so much for taking the time. Again, I'd love to hear your feedback. Have a great day.